are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
And you, of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh, and know they
welcome to the Situation Report for February 19th. My camera and my mic barely work today, as usual. I just wasn't in the mood to do the 30 to 40 minutes of Chris Reinke setup to get the shit to work right. So, yeah, little Crosby, Still and Nash, and Young, Teach Your Children. Thought that was appropriate for today with all of the press conferences from all the displaced scientists from the government who were doing non-binary bovine studies of gay pigs that have self-determined that they're non-binary. Jesus, the title of some of these studies that we paid for is unbelievable. My God. So I wanted to talk through, I posted a link in both the comments section and in the chat related to the Robert De Niro movie about a cyber attack. And there's been, I don't know, a bunch of movies that came out in 2020 about COVID and about post-apocalyptic, post-virus, humma-humma, right? We're seeing more and more of the cyber attack and cyber, let's just say, the cyber narrative. That's the best way to put it. And I thought I would spend some time today talking through what a cyber attack really is, so everybody understands and takes the mystery out of it, right? So there's a host of different terms that we use in the security business, right? One of them is called advanced persistent threat. That's a big phrase for saying there's bad guys that are in your network perpetually. No matter what you do, they're still in your network collecting and exfiltrating data, right? We also talk about ransomware. What's ransomware? Well, basically it's a piece of malware that encrypts everything in your network, and you either, and it's basically a customer service plan. The attackers tell you what plan you're on, and you decide whether you want to pay it or whether you want to rebuild your network. That's essentially what a ransomware attack is. It encrypts everything, right? And how it shows up is things will start acting weird, right? So certain servers will be affected immediately, right? But you won't notice it in total right away. Stuff starts acting weird, then things start to slow down, and then things just stop working. And when you're doing the response actions to it, there's a lot of ambiguity in any security incident. So no matter what you're looking at, you have to read through all of the ambiguity and figure out what's actually going on. And as services are dropping and you're doing your investigation, you have to be very, very quick to figure out, hey, this is ransomware. We need to start turning things off. And most companies don't, right? They go several hours before somebody realizes something's really wrong, and then all of a sudden things stop working. And ransomware is probably the most prevalent right now because it's easy to infect a host network. You send what's called social engineering emails, or phishing, as phishing, phishing, to somebody targeted within the organization. You have them click on a payload, which is usually a PDF file or some other file that looks like a document, and it activates that malware in your network, and it starts to go to work. That's typically how it's done, right? You go out to LinkedIn, you browse a company's personnel profiles, LinkedIn accounts, then you start targeting people within the organization. That's typically how it works. That's called social engineering, by the way, where you go and you do research on a company. You may even call a company and talk to the receptionist to get details. And you'd be surprised how much information people give up over the phone. It's mind-boggling. In fact, Kevin Mitnick used to do a course where, and I think I sat through one of them, it's been years now, where he would literally call people in the middle of the night before the class and get them to give him his credit card number. He'd say, hey, this is the front desk. For whatever reason, your credit card was denied. Can we verify the credit card number? And they're like, rattle off, you know, all the credit card number as well as the number on the back. And he's got you. And he'd go in there and post the last four with the code before every class. And invariably, there's always one person, right? Social engineering is really effective. And it's one of the things that, you know, as a CISO, I have to educate the business on, because most people don't understand that they would rather social engineer you and get you to give up information versus attack you and try to do a brute force, right? And there's several companies just today that had brute force attacks from both China and Russia across several different domains. So the attacks are ongoing all the time, right? And the one that we as a, you know, let's just say an industry have accepted, and we see a lot, used to see a lot of, we don't see as much anymore, is a denial of service attack, or distributed denial of service attack, right? DDoS or DOS. A DOS attack is where they flood your system with traffic and it overloads your border, your routers, your switches, your firewalls, overloads all that, right? That's less and less prevalent now because the firewalls and border protection have gotten more robust, but it still happens, right? They may flood a endpoint within your carrier, who it's AT&T, Retel, whoever you're using as your backbone. They may flood the carrier and slow down your traffic or stop your traffic, depending on what segment's affected. But there's a lot of different organizations now that offer DDoS protection. What they do is they'll see the traffic starting to pile up on certain endpoints, and they'll offload the traffic to another carrier. So they'll just, what's called cost lines, where they just switch from AT&T to Verizon or CenturyTel or one of the others, and it's seamless to you. That's what you pay them to do, right? So we've gotten sophisticated countermeasures to a lot of the denial of service attacks, but they still happen, right? I mean, the CrowdStrike patch, you could consider that denial of service, because one file hose the entire operating system on just about every machine that it was installed on. That's another denial of service attack, right? But it's That's the unintended denial of service deck, right? Like somebody that goes in and changes a firewall rule or a router rule, and or even, you know, load balancer, and it just hoses your whole network. Typically, and that was why when that happened, I said this was a planned thing. Because when you do maintenance, especially maintenance on a network, you have a bunch of sets of eyes that look over both your access control list, which is the rules that you put in a firewall to say, this is the traffic that could go through it. This is the traffic that should be blocked. These are the ports that can be open, et cetera, right? You have a bunch of people look at those rule sets before you deploy them. Because once you hit commit, all bets are off. And if it's wrong, it hoses your whole network, right? And typically in a distributed environment, like a cloud service provider, you're updating 50 firewalls all at one time, and you're using a tool to push out those firewall rules and instantiate them and make them active, right? So it's not a little process, and you can bring down an entire network with the flip of a switch if you're not paying attention, which is why you have both, you know, a bunch of sets of eyes on all these different rule sets, right? Because you have config files in routers and switches, you have ACLs and config files in firewalls now. So there's a host of different ways to hose yourself and to cause a denial of service attack. But those are typically rare because most companies have good operational hygiene and good security hygiene when it comes to that. But every once in a while, you know, somebody gets in a rush, they don't really pay attention, and it happens, right? But the most common denial of service attack is when you flood the distant end with traffic and you shut down everything coming out of it and going to it because it's just overloaded, right? It's just a degradation of service. It's not a complete outage, but it looks like an outage on your end. So that's one form of attack. The other form of attack that can be distributed as well as localized is malware, right? We talk about malware. What is malware, right? Everybody's like, well, I've got virus protection. You know, this concept of virus. Malware can be a lot of different things. It can be a keystroke logger where it logs every keystroke. And if you've downloaded and installed TikTok, guess what? You have keystroke loggers on your machines that you approved, you installed, and you have given access to everything on your phone, everything on your computer, whatever that thing touches. You download the app, you have just accepted malware. So let me just put that out there. So for all of you that are sitting there watching Ian Carroll on TikTok, you just downloaded a virus, or let's just say malware. So good luck with that. And the interesting thing about malware is it can do a lot of different things. I've seen malware that harvests credentials. It goes in and takes all of your authentication and identity from Windows boxes. It's called Mimikat. It's a little program. All it does is strip out what's called the SAM file. That's where you store all of your credentials in a Windows box. There's malware that goes in, and all it does is turn things off in the background. And there's malicious code like that literally will go in the background as you open a program, and it'll shut things down so nothing works right. And it'll look anomalous to you, like, okay, my programs don't work. But really, it's malware in the background. And I've seen, especially in the last 2 years, I've seen more of that kind of malware. There's a lot of different names for it, but just suffice to say it's disruptive. And it's designed to just be disruptive. It's not designed to destroy anything. And you could say, you know, hackers have a sense of humor, but really that's nation state designed. And it's designed so that it slows down your information loop and slows down your response time, because you're constantly fighting with the equipment that you're trying to use to build situational awareness. And it's once it gets into the wild, most of the time it's targeted at very specific individuals, but once it gets into the wild, everybody is susceptible to it. And that's the unintended consequences of it. Like one of the questions I get routinely is, why didn't we use more malware in both Afghanistan and in Iraq and against Iran? And I'll tell you why we don't. Because once you release something into the wild, it can go anywhere, and usually does. There's no such thing as an isolated event or, you know, a sterile environment when it comes to the internet. And you would be surprised at some of the things that people do that you would think, well, that's stupid, but they do it anyway. Apathy is a killer when it comes to cyber defense. That's why we say things like security hygiene. identity management. You have no idea how hard it is to manage identities and personas online, especially when you have tons of people that have multiple personas. I want you to all think about how many email addresses you have, how many email accounts you have, how many different email names that you use. Those are personas. Whether you like it or not, you've created, every time you create an email account, you create a persona. And that persona can be used by anybody. And it may not be tied to personal information, but the more personas you have, the easier it is for somebody to figure out who you are and to figure out what your pattern of life is. Because the other part of this equation is the pattern of life. And we've talked about, you know, Scout's talked about it. Chris from Combat Studies has talked about it. Joe Dolio's talked about it. You know, Troop's talked about it. All these guys have talked about patterns of life. And why it's important is most people don't realize that their pattern of life reflects a lot, especially on the internet and the persona that you're portraying on the internet. That's very important for those of us who are non-technical, right? If you're non-technical, you really don't get why that's a problem. And the thing to keep in mind is that when you have an iPhone, you have an Apple account, when you have a Google account, then you have Google Cloud, you have Gmail, you have Yahoo Mail, all of those personas follow you wherever you go, and some of them will never die. It's like most people don't realize that if you post something online, it's there forever. It's backed up in a variety of different decentralized places. So you may think that something's dead. It's really not. It's still out there. It's just probably on somebody's backup. All of that matters because we don't think about what we post online, especially if you're on Facebook or Instagram. My God, those are smorgasbords for intelligence collection, especially Facebook. And I want you to think about the people on Facebook that you know are serial posters, right? Okay, I made breakfast. This is what I had for breakfast. And they take a picture of their food. Okay, this one I had for lunch. Okay, I took, you know, three dumps between 10 and 1. They basically build their life profile and their pattern of life online. Instagram's the same way. But Instagram's even more insidious than Facebook because it limits your attention span. So most people don't even realize what they posted to Instagram. And I've seen some crazy stuff. Why this is important is when you wrap this all back to malware, when you wrap this all back to social engineering, when you wrap this all back to reconnaissance and profiling, a good hacker will conduct reconnaissance on everybody in an organization that they're trying to target. And what do you think their first stop is? LinkedIn and social media. That's their first stop. They don't have to go anywhere else to get a persona on you and figure out what your pattern of life is, because you post it all. And if you're under, you know, if you're 20 something and you started out at like 14 or 15 with a phone, my God, you get all your validation online. It's like a mind fuck smorgasbord for anybody that wants to put the Cujo Vulcan mind fuck on you. It's all right there. They just have to go look at your post. Oh, I feel lonely tonight. Oh, I feel like this thing is all collapsing on me and I'm just stressed out. I mean, go look at some of the posts that kids post on Instagram and Snapchat, et cetera. Snapchat's not as insidious because it's like a fucking goldfish. It has a 3-second attention span, 3-second post, which, by the way, most guys, when that came out, were like, where was this when I was in college? Wow, these pictures only last for 10 seconds. Really? But my point of this is, you can't just look at an attack and you can't just look at a denial of service attack or some kind of a ransomware attack and not realize that somebody in the organization was profiled for that attack to happen. And that's why it is so vitally important to limit as much as you possibly can online and limit your exposure to social media as much as possible. Because everything that's out there is being collected on, everything, either by another nation state, by our own intelligence apparatus or other intelligence apparatuses. And if you're affected at work and they're really targeting you, they could get you at home and work. If you have something in your hand that or on the table in front of you that's beaconing, trust me, it can be hacked. And why this is all important is that when you come back to this predictive programming around this cyber event movie, they've been talking now for 5 years about cyber events. First, the World Economic Forum talked about it, you know, the summer of a cyber attack where there's swarms and there's cyber storms. They've been telling us this for 5 years, but this is the next part of the apparatus in their last dying breath telling us that, yeah, we're going to do a cyber attack here in the US. And they could take down the grid, they could take down transportation, they could take down the ATC, they could do a lot of things with just cyber that would mess with us for months. And I don't take any of that for granted for the simple reason that I know how effective cyber can be when you couple that with cyber against critical infrastructure and how, you know, woefully unprepared and inadequate protections are around our critical infrastructure. I mean, there's movies and movies and movies about it. And it's true. I worked on SCADA systems, and a SCADA system is a system that controls a valve or a, you know, electric circuits that switch on and off power and measure power that's coming across the, you know, specific substations. There's SCADA systems everywhere, right? Some of this stuff is so old and so brittle, they can't move it off. Even railway switches are the same way. And cyber can disrupt all of that because most of that shit's really old, right? I mean, when's the last time you heard Windows 7? But there's still Windows 7 shit. There's still Windows 98 out there in closets all over the US that you may not even think about. So they don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting to take down the grid. They don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting to disrupt traffic or the air traffic control system. They can do a lot of different things via cyber that would cause damage and not take anything down. Redirect air traffic, tell aircraft to speed up, use cyber against specific aircraft to target other aircraft. There's a bunch of different things. And I've said this before, and it's the reason why I'm talking about it now, is that this movie and this predictive programming coming out right now is exactly what they did just before 9/11. 3 months, 4 months before, it was all about there's terror cells all over the US. We're susceptible to attack. Hamama. And to me, this is just the next logical step to build the technical control grid. Well, we need to implement digital ID because you'll be safer and we'll know who the Americans are and who the illegals are. Right. But that's where I see this going if this actually comes to pass. Do I think it's going to come to pass? Probably not. I think it's just another attempt to, you know, scare the public and get the public to sign up for something. I don't see them burning the bridge that they're standing on. But you never know, right? But like I said, they could do things that would disrupt day-to-day life in specific parts of the country that would do just as much damage as blowing up the system. So there's a lot of different scenarios that you could play out on the cyber front that would affect everybody equally. And that includes food production, food distribution, water, power, you name it. So there's, 2008 jump server. Yeah, I'm going to say this out loud. I'm going to date myself. I've been literally working to deprecate Unix systems that are probably 10 years past end of life. And there's a bunch of organizations that still use Unix and Linux. Or old instantiations of Unix and old instantiations of Linux. You'd be surprised. And I guarantee you, if you own a Windows environment, you have some old Windows services that you haven't deprecated yet. I don't care who you are. So, and that goes in line too with the next topic I want to talk through, which was Microsoft's release today of their quantum chip and their patenting of a quantum chip. And I can't remember exactly what the name of the chip was called. Let me see if I can find it. But Microsoft announced it today. Let's see here. They say it's several years from being perfected or being operational. It's whatever. Yeah, Microsoft quantum chip. It is called. Yeah. Majorana. And it's they're making the rounds about it, which is interesting because it's about the size of a cell phone, but it's quote unquote quantum. And they say it's the biggest breakthrough ever. I, well, whatever. My thought process is it was already perfected by somebody else and handed to them to go and build their own version of it. Just saying. Because the military and DOD and DARPA have been working on this stuff for how long? Years. So, yeah, it is what it is. But be looking for that. And this is, you know, this goes with some of that tech that's been suppressed. This is exactly how they would fit. Look at this supercalifragilistic high-speed breakthrough in quantum technology that will help us power all of our AI. What could possibly go wrong? But that's how the game's been played for the last 50 years. So I imagine that that's what's going on now, is they're getting us ready for an AI-driven, you know, federal government. And if you look at what Elon's doing with Doge, they're uncovering all of the malfeasance. They're uncovering all the criminality. They're uncovering all the fraud. They're uncovering all of the different systems that have been compromised for years and never remediated. And the next step will be, if we have AI in place, we can limit the amount of fraud. And don't forget that DARPA said that they were working on AI that would identify fraud before it happened. Pre-crime. So you can see where this is going. Now, the interesting wrinkle in all this is that today, Palantir's stock dropped 19% because their CEO said he was going to sell off basically 10 million shares, which is like, you know, $1.6 billion or some ungodly amount of money. And that's significant because most executives have a window when they can sell stock. And it's a very, very limited amount of time when you can sell. And on top of that, there's a certain cap on how much stock you can sell. So for him to be dumping that much stock that quick means that something else is on the horizon that's going to replace Palantir. That's what it says to me, because that's typically when you see a mass sell-off, it means they're expecting something to happen. Yeah, the Minority Report of DARPA. Go look it up. Pre-crime. And if you go back to Bill Barr, you know, the Bush family ball licker, when he was the AG, he talked about pre-crime and established a commission with the help of DARPA back in 2019 and 2020 to establish a pre-crime unit. That's real. He actually signed the memorandum and did. Now, is it still funded? Hell if I know. But it was out there. And if you're looking at the bigger picture now, they're building the picture of cyber. They're building the picture of AI. They're building the picture of technocracy. They're building the picture of, if we just had this AI, it would protect all of our networks. Sounds a lot like Skynet, right? That's where they're trying to angle us towards. And so the question that still sits there is the digital dollar, as well as the digital ID. Those are still sitting there too. Have they been discussed? Yes. Have they been approved? I don't know. Is the infrastructure there in place to be able to roll that out? I don't know. 2 years ago, the answer was no. Last year, the answer was maybe. Now, I don't know. Which brings me to the next piece of this, which is the narratives around Ukraine right now. So on my Substack update today, I talked about what I'm paying attention to and what I'm not paying attention to. So let me say this for the broader audience, so I can save all of you time. I flamed a lot of people in the last couple of weeks for sending me a bunch of bullshit. And I mean bullshit in the sense of podcasts that are like 6 hours long and articles from shit like Real Raw News and Kerry Cassidy, that group of loon bags. I don't pay attention to that. I'll watch the narratives coming out of those alternative media sources. I'll watch the narratives from different alternative media sites, but I don't drill down into what they're saying because most of the time it's just nonsense. So I don't spend a lot of time watching all of those different alternative sources. I do spend a lot of time watching what's trending across all the social media platforms, what the predominant narratives are across those platforms. And that's gotten harder and harder to do because of the algorithms and the AI that's being used on all of these different social media platforms. And the reason why all this wraps into the cyber attack scenarios is that every feed that you are interacting with on any social media platform is highly curated to your pattern of life, to what you read, what you actually click on, which different stories that you dig into, all that's being tracked. So you can't look at any social media platform and get all of the trending articles and trending stories because your little sector of the world is so curated to what you're interested in, your pattern of life to that point. And I make it a point to try and hit the guardrails when it comes to the censorship piece, just to figure out what they're censoring. And right now, the interesting thing that they're censoring is hidden technology, any of the Epstein stuff, and any of the Doge findings related to Jewish and Israeli NGOs, highly censored. Like to the point where if you post anything about Israel or any negativity about Israel, immediately shadow banned or even banned. That's the stuff I'm paying attention to. The rest of the stuff about, you know, that are like, I've got a couple of 2 or 3 hour podcasts sent to me where you've got a group of people or an individual that's diving into some aspect of history and they're, you know, going relating all the way back to the Nazis and the propaganda machine of Joseph Goebbels. Look, let me save you a bunch of fucking time. I'm not going to spend any time on that. Go read Pawns in the Game, the script, the narratives, the game, exactly the same, just a different dress. I don't need to go watch a 6 hour podcast that goes all the way back to 500 BC and explains how the Romans did everything, you know, that they're doing now, only they did it with, you know, scrolls versus an online media. I don't need to read that because that's, the game is moving faster now and focus is going to be the most important thing, especially in the next several months, because they're hitting us now faster and faster and faster. And you can see the beat. If you're paying attention, you could see the beat and the tempo increasing. And they're increasing the messaging and the narratives. And this cyber one is just one of many, right? What I think is interesting is what's disappeared is all this. There's still satanic stuff out there, but it's not nearly as pervasive as it was before. There's not a lot of cannibalism out there, but there is a hell of a lot of child grooming that's still out there. And it's got different masks and different flavors, but they're changing all the narratives. And if you go back to what I said after the election, I was disoriented after the election because that's not, influencing doesn't just stop. You don't just pause and stop. But that's what we saw. And that was them resetting and introducing different AI. Whatever AI they're using now is highly effective. And it's fast too. And go look at how much they polarized the left just since November. I mean, these people are off their fucking rocker. And what I'm seeing from the left is violence, the call to violence against anybody that doesn't believe what they believe. That's what I'm seeing on the left. And that is very, very scary because it means that they're trying to drive someone off the reservation. So there's a lot of different things collapsing all at once that are all coming to a culmination point. And what they really want, at least this is what I'm seeing from the narratives, what the elite really want is they want the public to go off the rails. They don't want to have to cause an attack, especially something kinetic, to drive it off the rails. They would rather have it go off the rails organically through messaging versus take us down through some kind of cyber attack and then use all the terror cells to do the kinetic. I don't see them wanting to do that. I see them wanting to drive people over the edge and to get people to flip out and do it in mass. And if you're watching the uptick in some of these protests, they're working very, very hard to try to get these protests to go violent. And it's not just here in the U.S., it's all over the world. Here in the U.S., they're really trying to drive the rift between left versus right. And they're not using the race card as much as they did before because nobody buys into it. Why? Because there's a lot of Black Americans and Hispanic Americans that voted for Trump and aren't going to buy into that shit. So they've switched tactics now, and they're trying to go after the extreme left. And I think people have underestimated just how brilliant it was for Trump to go through and dismiss all these federal employees and to lock them out and to start cutting budgets. That was a stroke of genius to disrupt the left's ability to start and to perpetuate violence through rioting and through protesting. Completely took the wind out of their sails. And there's probably a couple of moves up his sleeve that he hasn't played yet, which I'm waiting to see, because they're trying to ramp up the lawfare right now. And my favorite line was one on CNN. Civil employees have much more protection than non-civil employees for the very simple reason that they make less, that their entire focus is on the public. Yeah. Good luck with that. Let's see how that works out for you. Let me know how that works out for you, Snowflake, because I don't think you're going to get the relief you want. And they've tried to get Doge out of several places. And the interesting narrative when it comes to Doge right now is the public broadcast of Doge going into Fort Knox. How many people have wondered for the last 30 or 40 years if there's actually gold there? We're about to find out. And I think that's a stroke of genius, especially when it comes to the information. Because what's going to happen the moment they go in there and there's no gold in Fort Knox? Everybody's going to want to know, where did it go? And who was the belly button that moved or sold or gave away all the gold? I mean, it's not going to go back to Israel. Let's not get our hopes up. But it will go back to the city of London. At some point, it'll go back to the city of London. So great drama, if nothing else, right? But the way they're playing the information space right now is why I'm saying they're not going to do a mass cyber event where they take everything down. There's no cheese down that hole for them. It's better for them to disrupt in certain areas and perpetuate the fear and perpetuate the narratives that they want to drive us into the technocracy that they want. That's how I see it developing. I don't see it developing any other way. As much as I would love to say that, I don't see it developing any other way. So don't get your hopes up of, you know, what was that fucking Obama movie, that race baiting? Oh, what was the name of that shithole? Oh, I can't remember it. Anyway, I don't see that scenario playing out. I don't want to burn the bridge you're standing on. But there are a number of scenarios they could play which would disrupt us to the point where people would be begging for some kind of a relief. So no, Trump hasn't ended the chemtrails yet. I know that that's on everybody's mind, but no, he hasn't ended that yet. Okay, I was going to keep this fairly short tonight. So the other thing I wanted to put out, public service announcement, the shows are going to be hit and miss for the next couple of weeks. I have a bunch of family members that are sick. Yes, most of them are jabbed. So we're seeing Leave the World Behind. Thank you, Bad Moon. Yeah, what a race baiting fucking dumpster fire that was. That didn't go anywhere, thank God. just like the Civil War movie didn't go anywhere. That was just as stupid and pointless as the world behind. You know who I'd like to leave behind? I'd love to leave Big Mike and Barry behind somewhere. Here's one MRE. You guys have at it. Good luck. Back to public service announcement. Sorry, I should have stopped. Not paid attention to the chat. I was done with my thought. So show will be hit and miss for the next couple of weeks. I've got sick family members and all kinds of stuff going on. So I've been distracted with that and distracted with my day job. We are still on track to migrate to the Path Forward in May and start Murray Media Group in May and kick that off in May. For those of you who didn't see the soft launch of the intro, I'll play it again next week. A bunch of people asked me about t-shirts. It's in the description, Spreadshirt. That's going to go until June, and then I'm going to start stocking my own set of shirts for consistency and start doing the shipping out of here. So part of that's for standardization. Part of that is for branding, et cetera. So be looking for that as well. And then last but not least, the list of people that people have asked me to have on the show. Let me just address that. If you want to be an assistant and help do all the scheduling and help bring in guests and, you know, schedule them for shows, hey, I'm all about having that. I would love to have a couple of assistants scheduling and reaching out to people and getting them on the show and having a lineup for the next 6 months on the show. That would be great. I don't have the time to do any of that shit. I could barely keep up with my day job, which is kicking my ass right now. So it has been for the last several months. So if you want to volunteer to be an admin, hey, or to be a, you know, to work the show, hey, I'm all about having that conversation. But it's going to be even harder and harder to get guests on. Now, one guest, the guys in the roundtable, I'm going to get back as Ben Davidson. So I've reached out to him and I'll see if I can't get him on to talk Pole Shift. And then I'm going to have Luongo and Alex Craner on again and probably do another show with them. I'm supposed to go back on Crypto Rich's show. Mike Ferris and I haven't talked for a while. So, you know, probably do some shows with Mike. I have to do another show with Burlingame. So yeah, lots of stuff out there. It's just a matter of managing the time. So stand by. I think that's, let me make sure I go through my notes. Yeah, that's pretty much everything. But the link for the shirts is in the description, and it's in the description on both Rumble and on RSS and Apple. So, and by the way, which is, I think it's very interesting, is I was looking at the stats from both RSS and from Rumble, and I find it very, very hard to believe that the biggest engagement that I'm getting, especially for the roundtables, is on Apple Podcasts. Cracks me up. Most subscribers, most hits. Most people listen to the show on their phones. They don't watch the show. They listen to the show. It's just interesting when you look at the demographics, especially the way it plays out and is played out across the different platforms. It's really, really interesting. And I will say that the audience has changed a bit too, right? And when I don't publish at least three times a week, people move off to other channels. So, but yeah, Apple Podcasts is 46.82% of all the downloads for the show. So I think that's very interesting. And the audience outside of the US is very small. 84% US, 5% Canada, 2% Australia, 1.67% UK, and everything else is under 1%. So very, very interesting. But I bring that up because the demographics are changing too, and people's listening habits are changing as well. So my advice, given all the cyber that I've talked about tonight, is disrupt your pattern of life online. Minimize your footprint on social media. Minimize your footprint across social media platforms. It's one thing to listen, but it's another thing to post. And if you're just listening and you're just paying attention to the show and you have an account on Rumble, I guarantee you they're tracking that too. They're tracking which shows you're listening to, how often you're listening to them, et cetera, et cetera. So disrupt your patterns of life. Disrupt what you post, disrupt what you listen to, mix it up. And when you are, especially when you're getting ready to travel, minimize what you post online about travel. If you notice that I don't post a lot when I'm traveling, usually it's when I get back, hey, I was traveling, or I may say I'm going to be traveling, but I rarely, if ever, post where I'm traveling to until I'm either back or I get there. And I know that there's not going to be a correlation between start stop times. So keep that in the back of your mind too. And there's a host of ways to disrupt your patterns of life. The biggest one though is minimize your footprint online and minimize the amount of time that you spend on social media and the screen time on your phone. That's helpful too. And if you have an Apple phone and you're on the current iOS, AI is watching everything that you do on your screen. So you have no privacy with Apple anymore. So keep that at the forefront. In fact, I've moved off Graphene OS. I did Kali X first, which was, in a word, a flaming pile of hurl. Graphene is a bit frustrating for a lot of different things because you have to de-Google it. And it's a Google phone to begin with. And if you don't have any of the Google engine behind most of the applications that are in the Google Play Store, guess what? Not a lot of apps work on Graphene. So it forces you to get away from the convenience of a lot of the apps that are collecting on you and go into a more manual space. And I think for the time being, that's not a bad thing. Is it frustrating? Yes. Yes, it's very frustrating. In fact, there's days where I want to launch my phone underneath my car and drive over it several times just for good measure. But at the same time, I have to remind myself why I did that. And it was to get away from the Apple, to disrupt pattern of life and disrupt the tracking. Because your iPhone, if you have a Google phone with the Google OS, I guarantee it's tracking everything you do. Where you go in your house, where you go in your car, who you're hanging out with, all of that. So if you could de-Google yourself and de-Apple yourself, I would do it, despite the pain that goes along with it. But you can install, if you get one of the phones that's on the approved list for Graphene, you can actually install it using the web installer. It's super easy. It's super easy. And I didn't have to use any of the tricks that I have or any of the tools I have from my Motorola days to be able to get the phone to take the new OS. It literally did it all by itself. And I just pressed a few buttons. So even for the non-technical, there's a way to do it. And if you're on Telegram or you're on Rumble, typically there's somebody that's available that can help you if you get stuck somewhere. Or you hit one of the forums for Graphene, they can help you too. In fact, I had an issue with one of the bootloaders. It wasn't loading right, and somebody helped me get that set up within minutes on one of the forums. So there's a number of ways to do it. Or you could just have Chris of Combat Studies flash the phone for you and buy the phone through him. He does that too. So that's a way to do it. Last thing before I wrap this up, somebody asked me what I have in inventory. I keep getting asked what I have in inventory. I have a 26-inch 6.5 Creedmoor. That's an AR. I have two 308s. I have four 5.56s, two with 14-inch barrels and two with 12 or 13-inch barrels that are pistols. And I have SIG M17, and I have a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, M&P 2 9mm. It's a kit, comes with a knife. And I have a TSAS PX 5.7 pistol. That's what I have in stock. So if you're interested, feel free to reach out to me either on Telegram or reach out to me through republicarmament.com, and I can ship it to wherever you want. So that hopefully that answers the question. In fact, I want to blow that 6.5 out because the guy that ordered it flaked out as soon as I got the damn thing, and it's like a monster. It's a sniper rifle. So, and if you don't have a 6.5, then it'll be a new experience shooting that. Same diameter as a 308. So anyway, I don't know where it's going with that. I was going somewhere with it. Sorry. Too many things up in front of me. Last but not least, should be back tomorrow night with the round table. We'll see what the divas are doing. If they're going to be busy, we'll see what's going on. If nothing's going on, I may move it till next week. But anyway, until then, folks, stay situationally aware, minimize your footprint online. If you can, de-Google and de-Apple yourself. Chris of Combat Studies does the phone. So if you don't want to do it, he's a good resource. And he could probably use the business. I'll be back. If I'm not back tomorrow night, I'll be back for sure on Monday night. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.